This is Athens News Matters from WUGA. I'm Chris Shoup.
And I'm Alexia Ridley. Once again, the Clark County School District is back in the news, here to talk about a new round of ethics complaints, this time against board members, as well as the rest of the week in news and politics is our panel of commentators, Blake Odd from Flagpole Magazine, Gwen O'Looney from WXAG, and Lee Shearer from the Athens Banner-Herald. It's been a busy couple of weeks since we last had you guys in, so let's go right to our biggest story, more dysfunction in the Clark County School District. Blake, let's start with you, because you dug into this mess with a long piece this week.
Oh, you had to call on me, thanks.
Yes. A few months ago, some unnamed citizens working through an attorney, Patrick McKee, filed an ethics complaint against Superintendent Damon Means. Now, a new, also anonymous, complaint has been filed against some, again, unnamed members of the school board. So what's the nature of these new allegations?
Well, there's some sentiment that perhaps this latest complaint against the unnamed board members is in response to the ethics complaint against the superintendent that you referenced, but technically they are unrelated to each other. This latest complaint is to Cognia, which used to be known as Advanced Ed, which previous to that was known as SACS, the Southern Association of Schools and Colleges, which is the organization that accredits K-12 schools and colleges and universities in the Southeast. So this is a big deal. They will come in and they will investigate these allegations, and if they are found to be true, the potential penalties could include the loss of accreditation, which would mean that graduates of the school district, their diplomas would be really not even worth the paper that they're printed on. It's not a pretty situation. This happened in Clayton County about 10 years ago, and that county is still trying to recover. The repercussions would go beyond even the school district into it could impede our growth. It could prevent us from drawing new businesses. It could hurt the economy. There are lots of potential. Now, you know, this is the kind of the nuclear option. I'm not saying that all of this is going to happen, but that's the worst case scenario.
Hefty price to pay.
Right. And what the allegations suggest is that some of the board members, we don't really know who, but we have some clues, are attempting to micromanage and keep the superintendent from doing his job. And although we don't have a lot of details about this complaint, I did trace it back. There is a connection to another complaint that was almost filed in April by the superintendent. He had a meeting with one of the board members, John Knox, where Damon Means, the superintendent, claims that Dr. Knox basically tried to browbeat him into not firing a principal in his district on the east side. I don't know which school the name of the principal was redacted, but Dr. Means dashed off a message to Advanced Ed inquiring about how to file a complaint and forwarded some materials to them at that point back in April. A couple months later, I guess, decided that he wasn't going to follow through with that, but that is part of the evidence that Advanced Ed is going to be looking at whenever they come in and investigate, which could be as soon as 30 days. At the school board meeting last week, it was very contentious. The board was divided 5-4, but they are hiring their own legal counsel. They are not using the district's legal counsel in this matter. Apparently, they're going to be formulating their own response separate from the superintendent's to the Advanced Ed complaint. So there's been a real breakdown, and this has been brewing for some time, but there's been a real breakdown between not only among board members, but in the relationship between the board and the superintendent.
I don't see any good outcome of this. And as Lakeisha Gant, the board chairman, well, she didn't say exactly this, but where are the children in all this? That's who is going to be suffering the most.
That's right. Our whole community is going to be scarred by this contention between personalities in some cases and longstanding questions, really, about what school boards, what rights they have, what responsibilities. But even if they are boards, then they should be responsible for policy and setting accountability for the implementation of those policies. And it really upsets me that public schools would be hurt in this manner by this kind of, I really believe this is very personality based.
Are you guys hearing anything about parents losing confidence in the board?
Not particularly, but how can it be anything but that?
Well, I think, I don't know if they are losing confidence in the board. I don't know if it's targeted. I just think it's a general concern and worry about whether or not, one, like Blake said, any kind of credentials are going to be questioned that come out of the school system. But most of all, whether or not we are going to be able to move out of this, whether people are not creating a situation in which it cannot be resolved except for either means leaving or the board being changed in some way. Yeah.
I feel sorry for a lot of the board members because I think most of them actually just walked into a situation that was already developing.
Mm-hmm.
We have five new board members in
this
the past
year.
9 months.
Yeah.
So a lot of them are dropped right in the middle of this.
How did the vote you said was 5-4? How did that show up with new and old board members?
Divided.
Okay. There was no real clear kind of breakdown.
Lakeisha Gant and
Kara Dykeman, Linda Davis, and Charles Worthy were the four who voted not to hire their own lawyer.
Veterans, and the other two are two of the newcomers.
Right.
Okay.
So the complaints filed against Superintendent Means this spring were on behalf of an unnamed group of citizens and taxpayers, and the recent complaints against the members of the school board were also basically anonymous.
But they're not really anonymous, the second one, I think. It's just that we don't know who it was.
Advance Ed hasn't told us, but we don't know if the complaint was made to Advance Ed anonymously. They
right.
just haven't made public the names of whoever filed it.
So it may not be anonymous, but if so, why are people so unwilling to own their criticisms?
It's an extremely sensitive topic, and it's kind of fraught with all of these racial issues that are very difficult to talk about, and I think that's the main reason why people don't really want to come forward and put their cards on the table.
Race is always uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I mean, it's mm-hmm. just...
And I think it's part of the internet psychology that our whole society has, that you can send out an initial email that has all this information that may or may not be accurate, and then 20 threads later, you know, it gets larger and larger, and people jump in at a point and don't really know the whole thing, and they get more and more worried instead of informed.
One really sad thing to me is that Means has posed these ideas, which are really good ideas, such as school-based health clinics, after-school care, and other measures that are designed to...
Parent literacy.
To reduce the racial inequity in achievement we see in our schools, which should be, as he has said, pretty disturbing. I mean, things like, well, there's a big gap between the achievements of African-American and white students. And some of the places where that gap has been greatest has been places like Chase Street Elementary School, which is the star of our school system, perhaps. And it's the only school with a majority white enrollment.
Right. I feel like Means, he vocalizes goals that I can't believe our community does not support. We, our community, wants to address our poverty problems and recognizes the value of children getting the full opportunity of education. I think that he has gotten caught up into creating a contentious groups and by creating his own ally group, et cetera. We're playing more and more into us, them, rather than, as Lakeisha said, our children.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned poverty, because one of the differences I see is that under the previous superintendent, you know, we've all known that this problem has existed for a long time. It might have been new to Dr. Means, but it was not new to people who have been paying attention in the community. But we had been, under the previous administration, we had been tackling this issue more as an issue of poverty. And now Dr. Means has really put the emphasis on race and he says that poverty is not an excuse, whereas, you know, previously it had been looked at more holistically as a, you know, which
right.
These two things are tied together, obviously, for various reasons, but and the emphasis on test scores now that he has is much different than what people are used to, where the previous superintendent said basically test scores don't matter. I want kids to graduate. I'm worried about graduation rates. But now we're back to focusing on test scores, which has a lot of people scratching their heads going, wait a second, I didn't think test scores mattered. You know, why are we so concerned with test scores?
We're going to have to take a break right now. But before we do go to break, I want to let our listeners know that later in today's program, I'll be speaking one-on-one with Dr. Lakeisha Gant, school board president. Coming up in our panel discussion, Georgia gets even more national attention with two U.S. Senate races on the ballot in 2020. This is Athens News Matters from WUGA News.
Every day, NPR's All Things Considered includes news that keeps you ahead of the curve.
If this issue is not important enough for us to draw a line in the sand, what issue is?
Plus, the unexpected.
The wing, the skin, the neck, the heart, you're making chicken meatballs, cooking the knee cartilage.
All Things Considered from NPR News.
Welcome back to Athens News Matters on WUGA. I'm Alexia Ridley with our panel of commentators, Blake Aud, Gwen O'Looney, and Lee Shearer. So Georgia's U.S. Senator Johnny Isakson is retiring, meaning that Georgia will have two U.S. Senate races on the ballot in 2020. So since the race for Isakson's seat is going to be a special election, that's going to work differently than the race for David Perdue's seat. No primary, for example. How does the special election work?
Special election works that they just, all the people get their name on the ballot and there's a vote in November. And of course, under Georgia law, they have to get 50%. So there'll probably be a runoff. But I kind of like that. I think it's a positive thing because, you know, we really find out who's the preferred out of all the candidates and who's the second. And go with that. So party does kind of disappear in that situation.
Doesn't it favor Republicans, you think, because of Republicans' tendency to turn out more in runoffs?
Now that's true. The runoff always has in our state. That's a good point, Lee.
Well, it's called a jungle primary, and that's the way they do it in Louisiana and in California. And it is kind of interesting because if you look at a state like Louisiana, a lot of times they might get two Republicans, and in a state like California, a lot of times they might get two Democrats. Because it might lean so far one way to the other, you might actually see two people from the same party be the top two in a runoff, which I think is kind of interesting. And I think it tends to push people towards the middle, whereas you usually have people running to the extremes on either side in a primary, a partisan primary. I think doing it this way, people really have to run more towards the center. So it's a different kind of campaign.
In the meantime, there's all sorts of speculation about who Governor Brian Kemp may appoint in the interim. Will it be a placeholder? The name Sonny Perdue has come up, which would give Georgia two senators named Perdue.
That is not good. I just don't see that happening.
I don't either.
And on the other hand, he may pick some political ally, some up-and-rising person who might have a good chance to win the election.
I would put my money on probably Doug Collins, who's a congressman from Gainesville, who is
one of the most conservative people in the state.
He represents a very conservative district, and he's a rising star because he is the ranking member on the Judiciary Committee, which has been involved with investigating the president quite a bit. He's been a thorn in the Democrat side and on TV a lot. So
his seat will remain safely in Republican hands.
It will. It's one of the most Republican districts in the country. I think the other likely option would probably be the Attorney General, Chris Carr, who's been who's very close to Johnny Isakson. And
Do you think he wants to run another race?
Well, I don't.
He can't keep his wife as his chief staff.
It's certainly a promotion. But I have a hard time believing that Johnny Isaacson would resign without some kind of assurances that he would have input into.
He loves Chris Carr. Take his You're place. Right.
Well, so. Do we know that he's not, in essence, forced to resign because his health situation is as grave as it is?
His health situation has been grave a really long time.
It has.
He knew before he was reelected that he was in bad shape and that he should have retired before then.
I was surprised that he ran again three years ago. But I haven't seen him in a while, but the last time I saw him, he did not look like he was in
not
good
at
shape
all.
Physically at all.
Yeah. His staff has been running his office. I mean, he's made very few appearances for those years.
I haven't seen him in so long.
Yeah, right.
Have you guys heard of any potential candidates getting into this race on either the Republican or Democratic side?
I heard lots of Republican names, but I haven't heard any Democrats.
Nothing solid. I mean, a lot of speculation. You know, people are talking about Michelle Nunn, Jason Carter, who both ran in 2014.
John Barrow and Michael Thurman. I'll tell you, y'all, I have been a Michael Thurman fan for a long time.
His name perennially comes up. I mean, yeah. He's been mentioned in connection with David Perdue as well, but he's running
right.
He's running for Supreme Court.
And Barrow is he would be a great judge. He would be a good judge, you know. It's just like the presidential right now. We've got to wait to see who comes out with the right, you know, money, the right support, and we need a good candidate. We cannot afford another John Ossoff, who was just a waste of our energy.
Well, he's another name who comes up too.
I know that, but that's a mistake.
He was a terrible candidate.
Let's move on to the animal shelter. As we were talking about this week's show, I know, Lee, you mentioned that you wanted to talk about the Athens-Clarke County Animal Shelter. And there's been a lot of consternation on social media about the shelter lately. Can you fill us in on what's going on?
Well, back in July, the shelter euthanized, I think, 31 cats because of a disease definition. Feline, was it?
Leukopenia.
Yeah.
That turned out to be wrong. That outraged the animal rights folks. The county announced that it was going to make some changes in operations, which has not remotely satisfied animal rights advocates who point to recommendations that outside agencies have made some time ago, which have not been followed. And now this week we get the news that the dog part of the animal shelter is quarantined after the cat part has reopened after being 2 weeks closed for disinfection there.
Fortunately, only 3 puppies have been put down, and they came in from an outside litter of 6. The remaining
right.
3 seem fine.
The allegation is that they waited too long. You know, they vaccinated these puppies when they came in, but then when they started to appear ill, or at least one of them did, they didn't immediately take action. I guess they waited at least a day before. So volunteers and people people can carry the parvovirus. It doesn't make them sick, but, you know, all these volunteers that were at the shelter, they were exposed to the parvovirus, and then they went back and they played with their own dogs or at their vet clinic and treated other people's pets. So, you know, there was the potential for it to be spread to all kinds of different places.
And after the first incident, the county officials said they had no protocol for dealing with that situation. And I wonder, sounds like the same thing is true here.
It sounds like they need protocols for all of these things to protect themselves, their volunteers, and one of the things you didn't mention, Lee, nicely, was that the necropsies showed that the cats did not have the disease, and so, but the puppies there, and so obviously we need to be testing before we're euthanizing. That might be part of the process.
Well, they tested one of the cats, and it came up a light positive, but that was because the cat had recently been vaccinated.
Right.
And then they sent off, they euthanized a couple of the cats and sent them off to have the necropsy done, but they didn't wait for the results to come back in before they euthanized the other 40 cats.
One really compelling part of this whole narrative to me is, why here in the South are we exporting dogs and cats from shelters to the North? I mean, is it because we're so slack about not having wild cats and dogs out there reproducing?
Their strays die off in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Our strays don't.
So they're just there. It's not that they're better in animal, keeping their animals spayed and neutered.
No, it's that they have weather conditions that help them in the winter. You know, I tell you, this is really when I was mayor, we improved the shelter and did all of these things. But the reality was that it takes a huge amount of resources to handle every single animal that comes in. And we live in a community, unfortunately, that's very, very transient. And a lot of that transience is from youth. Youth who have animals maybe at home or find a stray or whatever, and then desert that stray. And so we really do have more of a problem than most communities. And to allocate the resources to do it exceptionally well is very hard.
Now, I spoke so decisively on that, but that is one of the reasons why I've heard up north the animals do tend to die out in the winter where it's ours.
You're from Michigan. You should know.
Right. So. via Savannah. But we are out of time. We will have to leave it there. My thanks to our panel of commentators, Blake Odd from Flagpole, Gwen O'Looney from WXAG, and Lee Shearer from the Athens Banner-Herald. This is Athens News Matters from WUGA.
Hours ago, halfway around the world, the day has already begun.
Tens of thousands of people in Venezuela.
Britain is leaving the European Union.
Everyone was just running. People were crying. They were in tears. And we didn't know what was happening. Police kept telling us to move back, move back.
The thousands of protesters marched along a route.
When you need to know where the world went while you weren't looking. Morning Edition. Listen every morning.
This is Athens News Matters. I'm Chris Shoup.
And I'm Alexia Ridley.
Tensions continue to grow in the Clark County School District. Members of the Board of Education are at odds with each other and in some cases with Superintendent DeMond Means. Meanwhile, Clark County students are caught in the middle of escalating friction. Here to explain what's going on in the Clark County School District is the president of the Clark County Board of Education, Lakeisha Gant. Dr. Gant, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I want to start with the most obvious question. What's behind all the seeming dysfunction?
I think there are a variety of different considerations when we think about what's going on in the school district. Right now in our nation, tensions are high when we discuss thoughts and perspectives on education, politics, in our community. Our community is a microcosm of that, and certainly our school district is a microcosm of our community. There are varying perspectives regarding what it looks like to be an effective team. I will say that I think that all 10 of us have the goal and desire to be an effective team and to make decisions that are best for our school district.
What's your message to parents who may be losing their confidence in the school district?
Well, there are a few things that I would encourage parents. I'm a parent myself, and so my husband and I have 4 children in the Clark County School District, and my confidence in the school district remains. While things that occur they certainly impact the culture, the climate, and can very well impact the morale. And so the first thing I would say is that I certainly understand any fear or concerns that parents may have. I think as it relates to what parents can do or additional things they can think about is that we still have qualified teachers and administrators in our district and district level officials and board members. And so even in the midst of tension, that does not diminish the qualifications and the competency of stakeholders that are working with children.
Well, as you said, there are a variety of different people with different backgrounds coming together, trying to hammer out solutions, but bringing very different perspectives. And so sometimes that may look from the outside not as smooth as you'd like it
That's
to
right.
see.
That's right. Well, and when you think about Athens and actually nationally, there's work to do when it comes to having constructive conversations around race, around class, and around all of the dimensions of our identity and how that actually intersects with education. And there's a history here. And so we haven't, we're working to figure out how to have those constructive conversations. A part of the process when we are discussing equity and any topics that are related to equity, one of the results of that is discomfort. And so to a degree, some of that discomfort is normal. Again, there are also other things as we think about personalities and our perspectives and, you know, what it means to be a board member versus what it means to be a superintendent. All of those things we're figuring it out. And certainly, you know, I would be naive if I thought that there were no bumps that we or and no challenges. We are experiencing some challenges, but I remain hopeful. I remain hopeful because I know that when people commit to change, it can happen. It just requires looking at ourselves as well.
And in May, an unidentified group of citizens filed an ethics complaint against the superintendent with the Georgia Professional Standards Commission, alleging that Dr. Means may have plagiarized a letter to colleagues, mischaracterized his doctoral dissertation, and accepted an inappropriate gift. Can you tell us the status of that complaint?
What I can say with that complaint is that I think it may have been last month's board meeting. The month before last, we as a board decided to follow up with the Georgia Professional Standards Commission and to get additional information. So myself and the vice president, Ms. Linda Davis, we gathered the questions that our colleagues on the board had and presented those questions to a representative from the Professional Standards Commission, and we have recently compiled those questions and returned those questions back to the board.
Do you have any idea, or can you tell us anything about who filed the complaint?
I'm not sure who filed the complaint. Based on what I've read, public information that I've read, it's a group of anonymous individuals. And so I have no idea about who filed the complaint. I am hopeful that when complaints are filed, that again, as a community, we build the capacity and we continue to build the skill to face each other with our concerns.
Last month, another complaint was filed with Advanced Ed, now known as Cognia, which oversees accreditation of schools. The complaint, filed against unnamed members of the school board, alleges that some board members are influenced by, again, unnamed, special interest groups. Can you speak as to who the board members are and who are the alleged special interest groups? And is there any validity to all these allegations?
I'm not sure who the group who filed the complaint is. So again, it is an anonymous group of individuals. I am not sure of the specific individuals that the complaint is alleging engaging in the said behavior. And so I've said this before publicly. We're at a place where we are trying to fix relational issues through formal processes. And while that's not nothing, okay, there's a place for formal processes. And I certainly respect the fact that sometimes people will use the resources they have. And so the filing of formal complaints or processes may be the resource that people feel, maybe the best step that people feel is necessary to get their voices heard. And so I don't want to diminish the role of that. I also know that lasting change does require more. And so there are certain things that, my belief is that there are certain things that, whether we're talking about laws or policies or formal processes, can't fix in and of themselves. And so that's where sitting across from each other, being able to have tough conversations is very important. And right now, I can only hope that we're on our way there.
You voted against a motion to retain a special counsel to respond to the allegations. Why?
I voted against the motion. There are a couple of reasons. One is I prefer to be as prepared as I can. So as you know, I'm still learning the role of presidency. And there were some steps that the president would have to make as a part of the motion. And I was not familiar with those steps and wanted to be well acquainted with what this motion meant for me or this resolution meant for me. Secondly, it relates to my earlier point, and that is it was yet another formal action. I don't want formal actions to take the place of a team sitting beside each other and working through our differences. And I also think that a simple motion would have sufficed.
Everyone obviously agrees that this should be about the students. How is this impacting the nearly 14,000 students in Clark County?
I think it is accurate to say that things that happen in systems impact people. So I won't say that it's not impacting them. Certainly if parents are worried, if stakeholders are worried, kids are witnessing these conversations. And so that's my biggest concern, that we are impacting children. And so if teachers become concerned about the tensions between the board or the tensions within the community, that can very well impact how they show up. If parents are worried about the same thing, that can impact the conversations that they're having. And so it is impacting students, or there's the potential certainly for it to impact students, because I don't have any concrete evidence that it is. And that is why, for me, it's important for us to move forward with resolving some of these issues.
Dr. Lakeisha Gant is the president of the Clark County School Board of Education and the board member for the 7th District. In the wake of the El Paso shootings and ICE raids in Mississippi, Athens-Clark County commissioners came together last week to draft a resolution in support of immigrants, undocumented residents, and the Latinx community. Here to talk about that is Beto Mendoza, founder of the Athens Immigrant Rights Coalition. So, Beto, thank you for being here. And tell me a little bit about this resolution, Beto. Who was involved in writing it?
Well, basically, Tim Denson and the Mayor Kelly Gertz is what I understood. And, of course, the whole commission should take part in order to approve something this big.
And it was unanimous. The whole commission voted for it.
Amazingly. I think in this time they're in the right size of the history.
So, Beto, tell me, what does it say and what does it mean for these communities?
It means a lot. I haven't seen anything in the whole nation condemning these attacks. This is after years of attacks of public spaces against people who speak Spanish. But what I think is important in this resolution, which is remarkable, is this bring a new, a fresh conversation, a new conversation we should be having, because the resolution point out the rhetoric of white nationalists, and is this taboo we have in USA. We don't talk about these problems we have, the domestic terrorism. And when we heard politicians putting immigration in the category of national security, and they keep bringing that rhetoric against migrant workers who are working in the fields to grow our food, but they refuse to speak about the mass shootings. So the commission is saying, listen, if we have a problem, and if we have an emergency really, a wall is not going to solve it.
And you were there to read this resolution aloud in English and in Spanish. What was that like, Beto, and what kind of response or reaction did you get in the room?
It was surreal in that moment. People inside, they were pleased. They were in the migrants, the Latinx community who attend that meeting. This was more like a ceremony for us, a little recognition after many years of being attacked, being under the loop because our skin color or accent or immigration status.
And obviously, Beto, for many, this is a good thing, but a resolution isn't hard policy. What do you think needs to be done to really help the undocumented and immigrant communities in Athens?
So the first step is that really recognize the presence of undocumented immigrants and immigrants in the county. And second, recognize the contributions, the tax, the work, and the cultural contribution to this area of Athens. And secondly, to be aware of anything we do to anyone, it affects us, all of us. If we deport undocumented immigrants, remember their kids are in the school district, and they will suffer, and their friends will suffer, and their suffering will become to their houses.
Beto, thank you for your time and for your perspective.
Thank you, Alexia.
Beto Mendoza is the founder of the Athens Immigrant Rights Coalition and the co-founder of Dignidad Immigrante in Athens.
This is Athens News Matters from WUGA News.
An All Things Considered story starts with the news.
Two women set to become the first female Army Rangers ever.
That day, we wanted to follow it with a conversation from a woman who was in the military.
So we just email everybody,
whittle it down to one. We get her on the phone.
Welcome to the program, Sergeant Marquez.
Thank you very much, Audie.
I want to start just with your reaction.
There's more to every story on All Things Considered every afternoon.
This is Athens News Matters. I'm Chris Shoup. This next story is for the birds, quite literally, and one specific type of bird, our friend the humble vulture. Vultures are not as well regarded as some of their smaller, prettier songbird cousins, but vultures are pretty important to our quality of life. The Athens-Clarke County Solid Waste Department's Recycling Division is celebrating the vulture with the 6th Annual Athens Vulture Festival. Yeah, that's a thing. On Saturday, September 28th at the Athens-Clarke County Landfill from 8 a.m. to noon. Here to talk about the festival and the importance vultures play to our community is Mason Tao from the ACC Recycling Division. Mason, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start out. What are some of the activities that we can expect to partake in at the Vulture Festival this year?
Well, I'd say the most exciting thing are the live birds. We have Winged Ambassadors, a nonprofit organization, coming. And they're bringing a black vulture, a barred owl, and a Harris hawk, potentially some other birds, but those three were confirmed. And they'll be bringing those to show up close different parts of the bird, why they're important, and just giving people an experience. A lot of times we see the birds from far away. This will be up close and personal.
Well, you called them important, and in your announcement, you actually call vultures nature's cleanup crews. So why are they so important?
We kind of see them as our secondary mascot for the solid waste department. They come in after nobody else wants it, no other animals want to eat it, and they kind of take care of cleaning up the roadways, the sides of the road, and then a lot of times we don't even see them because they're out in the woods and fields taking care of deceased animals. We kind of get that rap as well as the solid waste department coming in and taking care of cleaning up what nobody else really wants to deal with.
Well, so you're educating folks like me and people that will attend the festival, but how would we go out and sort of be our own ambassadors and let our neighbors know that, you know, vultures are pretty cool and useful birds?
I'd say probably first education. That's kind of my go-to as the education specialist for the recycling division. Just understanding animals and understanding nature really makes us appreciate it a lot more. And then also things that you can do as far as waste reduction. That's another primary goal of this event. Composting, recycling, keeping things out of the landfill also helps keep birds like the vulture out of the landfill because they're attracted to the food.
So, speaking of the health of a vulture, then what can we do to keep the vulture population as healthy and populated as we can?
They are protected species. I'm not the expert on the vultures. I really kind of do the event and then bring in the experts to talk about the birds themselves. But like I said, just keeping the environment in which they live clean and not really encroaching on their territory as much as we can, that will help preserve those birds. And they are protected, like I said.
So I know I seem to see what I believe to be turkey vultures. In fact, they've made quite a habit of coming around in the fall and nesting in the trees in my backyard. And I mean by the tens. I mean, it's quite a few of them back there, and they come back every year. So is that the most common in our area?
Well, we do have two primary types of vultures in our region. It's black vultures and turkey vultures. And you'll see those at the event or anytime that you go to the landfill. They're constantly circling. And the reason for that is the smells and sights of the landfill and the composting operations include food. So they're just looking for their next meal, just like we all are. But that's one of the reasons that we focused on the vulture for this event is you can see them right there, thousands of them in the air, and then being able to see them up close. It's kind of a cool juxtaposition for that event.
So I understand you're working with the Oconee Rivers Audubon Society as well.
Yes, Oconee Rivers Audubon Society has been a partner with us from the beginning. And actually before this event, this actually may have been why we started this event in the first place. They've done bird walks around the property at the landfill as part of the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act by the EPA. All landfills have to have a buffer zone around the outside, which is perfect ecosystem for basically untouched habitat. So a lot of birds and a lot of other animals live right around the landfill because of that protected zone, and that's perfect for bird walks. So the event kicks off at 8 a.m. with Oconee Rivers Audubon Society leading a bird walk through there. And they actually do a big bird walk twice a year, and this is one of them. And then they do smaller ones throughout the season as well.
And where can we go to find out more?
To find out more about the Vulture Festival, visit accgov.com/vulture or our Facebook page, Athens-Clarke County Recycling Division. We have an event on Facebook as well for the 2019 Vulture Festival.
Mason Tao is a recycling program education specialist with Athens-Clarke County, and we've been talking about the 6th Annual Vulture Festival, which kicks off at 8 a.m. on Saturday, September 28th at the ACC Landfill. And you can find out more at accgov.com/vulture. Finally today, a follow-up to a story that you heard on Athens News Matters 2 weeks ago. WUGA contributor Lauren Baggett told us about Project Might, an initiative launched by University of Georgia professors, including College of Education professor Dr. Bernadette Heckman, in order to provide teleconference counseling services to people living with HIV. Today we bring you an update from one of those same researchers. A grant worth $1.4 million has been awarded by the U.S. Health Resources and Services Administration to a team led by Dr. Heckman. The grant will bring an interdisciplinary team of researchers together from UGA's College of Education, the School of Social Work, and the College of Public Health in order to combat the state's ongoing opioid crisis. This team of researchers intends to train over 100 graduate students to help increase mental and behavioral health services in the state of Georgia and beyond. As part of the award, students will be trained in a multitude of treatment approaches, including medication-assisted treatments that combine behavioral therapy with medication, as well as interpersonal therapy and motivational enhancement.
This has been Athens News Matters from WUGA. Our senior producer is Martin Matheny, and our segment producers are Gemma DiCarlo, Alex Vandenhoevel, and John Slights. The opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of WUGA or the University of Georgia.
Don't forget, if you missed part of this week's show, you can listen again online at WUGA.org or on the NPR One app or the WUGA app, available for Apple and Android, wherever you get your apps. For Alexia Ridley, I'm Chris Shoup, and this has been Athens News Matters from WUGA News.